This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Hi, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And hello, all you secular voters.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. And this week we are celebrating democracy in America, the land of the free. This is the November 10th, 2012 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. We produce the show in Madison, Wisconsin. We broadcast in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Ithaca, New York, Columbia, Missouri, and other cities, including Monterey, California.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, your friendly local neighborhood atheist here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And some agnostics.
And agnostics. And we have members over 19,000 around the country in every state and every province. And we have two purposes: to educate the public about non-theism and to buttress that wall of separation between church and state.
Today we're going to talk with Peter Boghossian. He's a philosophy instructor from Portland State University who has a book coming out, A Manual to Create Atheists. Peter spoke at FFRF's National Convention last month, and he's part of our billboard campaign that says, "This is what an atheist looks like." That campaign is still up in Portland. And then later, we'll have an election roundup before his interview.
So, Dan, next week you are going to be able to report back about how your debate at Oxford went.
I will be able to say it was a wonderful debate. I won the debate.
You and Michael Shermer are debating Christopher Hitchens' religious brother, Peter. Who knew he had a religious brother and a philosopher from the UK?
Well, we're debating a mathematician named John Lennox, and we're teaming up with Peter Milliken, a philosopher professor who's on our side.
Oh, so there's three against two?
Yeah, three. And all three of us are former believers, by the way, too. It's three against three. And there's also the woman who wrote the book, The Dawkins Delusion.
So, oh. You know. And you have to wear tuxedos, right?
That's right. I have my jazz tux.
So what does the woman have to wear?
I don't know.
Formal black.
I guess we'll see. Yeah. And speaking of Michael Shermer, who I'll be seeing in Oxford, he and Jerry Coyne and you, Annie Laurie, just spoke at the second Mexican Atheist Conference last week in Mexico City. We listened to the U.S. national anthem as we came in. So while we talk about this, Dave, can you cue up the Mexican national anthem, the himno? Mexicanos al grito de guerra. Annie Laurie, what happened down there?
Well, I've never been to Mexico before, and now I've been to the world's largest city, Mexico City, and I didn't realize when I flew there's 22 or 23 million people. Wow. And the conference was very good. Jerry Coyne in particular gave a very good presentation on evolution, and there were a lot of Mexican scientists, including a woman astronomer, an atheist, and a very well-known Mexican biologist from Argentina who is also an atheist. So a lot of young people, a lot of students, and a scattering of young women, which I was very glad to see.
A city of 22 million people. That's like 100 Madison, Wisconsins.
But everything was, the airport was close to the Central Historic District where I was staying. And this coincided with the Day of Death festivities. And how do they say
that? El Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead.
And it's not, they don't want it to be compared to Halloween, but of course it's the same idea. It's for all ages, and there were sugar skulls as decorations at all the restaurants, and they told me in homes children eat them. There were people wandering around in 19th century garb with Mexican-looking skeletons painted on their faces. It was very fascinating. And then there were all Halloween-type things. I'd see Voldemort walking down the street. There was one day I got to go on a little tour thanks to our host.
You saw the cathedral?
Gerardo
right there in
Ramos.
The...
Yeah, I saw the cathedral with the usual very poor and sometimes just very beleaguered beggars. And then the palace is right next door. So it's sort of a true church-state division there. And I toured... Diego Rivera's mural. You go up the stairs and there's his mural, and it's very secular. He's very anti-clerical. And I had churros. I said I wanted some authentic Mexican food, and so...
Did you see that mural that he did about church and state?
Yes, I just said that, yeah. Dan.
Well, I was reading a note that Dave handed me.
And then I had some wonderful regional real Mexican food, and they said... Taco Bell is not Mexican food. And I said, I know that. Hmm. And what I had was really good, you know, fish and avocado and plantains and things like that.
And in Mexico City itself is pretty liberal, pretty progressive. Some of their laws are very strong on state church separation.
And, well, Mexico City has gay marriage, unlike Wisconsin. And it's the only place in Latin America where abortion is legal, I think up to about 12 weeks and available. I think it's legal some places and there are no clinics. With the wonderful exception now of Uruguay, which just a couple of weeks ago legalized abortion.
So welcome Mexican atheists to the free thought community.
Yes, very, very promising.
And this takes us now to a post-election roundup, although here in Wisconsin, as in about 30 other states, religionists have pushed through constitutional amendments banning same-sex marriage. We had some real progress on Election Day last Tuesday, given the religious right the old one too. In Maine and in Maryland, voters approved ballot initiatives to begin allowing same-sex unions. In Washington State, the last we heard as of the recording of the show, voters also passed an initiative to legalize gay marriage.
And also on the good news front, we had two bad ballot initiatives in Florida voted down. There was a proposed amendment to curb abortion rights in various ways. And then we saw Proposition 8.
Proposition 8
defeated.
In Florida, which would have deleted language from the Florida Constitution that prohibits funding to religion, language which is much more specific than the First Amendment. This, thankfully, was defeated by Florida voters.
It's like the second or third time they defeated similar constitutional amendments in Florida. On the bad news front, it does look like a measure legalizing physician-assisted suicide failed in Massachusetts. In California, a ballot measure to repeal the state's death penalty was defeated. So we still have that biblical eye for an eye, life for a life mentality going strong in California.
And we're also sad to see that U.S. Representative Pete Stark, who was called the dean of California's congressional delegation, he was defeated by a fellow Democrat. Stark is 80 years old. He won office 40 years ago.
The significance of that, of course, is that Stark is the only openly non-theistic member of Congress we have at the moment. And so we'll have to see if someone else in Congress will be courageous enough to identify themselves in this manner. And of course, they're there.
We had Pete Stark on our radio show a couple years ago. And it's deja vu all over again with the election. Can you believe it? Roy Moore. It looks like he won Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. You might remember, he was removed from office by the 11th Circuit for failure to adhere to a court order to remove his enormous Ten Commandments monument from the rotunda of the Alabama Supreme Court building a few years ago.
So we saw Representative Murdoch, who was running for Congress in Indiana, who said babies from rape were an intentional gift from God. We saw him defeated. Missouri's Akins, who claimed that legitimate rape victims don't get pregnant and who was a religious fanatic, was defeated. Now, closer to home, in Wisconsin, we're seeing about time its first female U.S. senator and the first openly gay senator with the victory of Tammy Baldwin. So here are some of the interesting outcomes of November 6th.
But as usual, the religious right was very busy this past election trying to break the law, encouraging pastors and priests to endorse political candidates from the pulpit. We talked earlier about the Pulpit Freedom Sunday.
Since 2009, there have been no real investigations of illegal politicking by pastors and priests by the IRS. And this appears to be due to a 2009 federal court ruling in Minnesota, which said the IRS didn't have enough staff to appropriately investigate houses of worship after they had a reorganization. And so instead of reorganizing themselves better, the IRS apparently has done nothing. It has adopted no new procedures. So these political pastors are running rampant. As many as 1,600 were alleged to be breaking the law by endorsing from the pulpit.
Last week, we took action, FFRF took action, against the Reverend Billy Graham and his blatant politicking with full-page ads. You might have seen them from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association running all over the country, especially in the battleground states. Billy Graham had met with Mitt Romney in his North Carolina home in October, where the evangelist tacitly endorsed Romney for president. According to the Huffington Post, although the Romney campaign stopped short of calling it an endorsement, Graham made it clear at the meeting's conclusion that Romney had his support. After leading a prayer for the Republican nominee, Billy Graham told Romney, "I'll do all I can to help, and you can quote me on that." 2 days later, the ministry announced its Vote Biblical Principles campaign. Full-page ads in 3 Sundays in a row in the Wisconsin State Journal, Milwaukee Journal, the New York Times, and many other newspapers. Graham's face dominated half of that full-page ad and reproduced his signature. 2 different versions. The text attributed to Graham read,
On November 6th, the day before my 94th birthday, our nation will hold, this is Billy Graham, one of the most critical elections in my lifetime. This is a very egocentric ad. We are at a crossroads and there are profound moral issues at stake. I strongly urge you to vote for candidates who support the biblical definition of marriage between a man and a woman, protect the sanctity of life, and defend our religious freedoms. The Bible speaks clearly on these crucial issues. Please join me in praying for America that we will turn our hearts back to God. And this ad was clearly marked a paid advertisement by the Billy Graham Evangelical Association, which is a 501c3 tax-exempt charity, and tax-exempt organizations are forbidden by the IRS to engage in partisan politicking because that it's taxpayer subsidy. And it wasn't necessary for Billy Graham to say vote for Mitt Romney because it was very obvious. There's only one candidate.
Like, we're not being political, wink, wink. Just vote biblical values.
Well, and vote for the one who is against gay marriage. And we know clearly, how they stood. So it's really dirty pool for taxpayers to subsidize these ads. And so we complained. We wrote a letter to the IRS for all that's worth. But we also complained to in Wisconsin, to the equivalent of the state election board, about these coded ads, these inappropriate ads by the Billy Graham Association. But it does look like he wasted his money, doesn't it, Dan?
After Billy Graham's October 21 meeting with Romney, references to Mormonism as a cult were scrubbed from the ministry's website, according to Religion News Service. We received at FFRF many complaints from our North Carolina members and members of the public after Graham was featured in ministry ads supporting the North Carolina referendum to ban gay marriage, which passed this last summer. We found no evidence that the ministry had registered with state election officials in North Carolina. They're abusing their tax-exempt status.
And last week, our senior staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, sent letters of complaint to the IRS documenting inappropriate partisan activity by the Madison, Wisconsin's Catholic Bishop Robert Morlino. He wrote that no Catholic may in good conscience vote for pro-choice candidates or for candidates who promote same-sex marriage or who would promote laws that infringe upon our religious liberties and the freedom of conscience.
That latter reference, infringe on religious liberties, in Catholic code, talks about complaining about Obamacare, the contraceptive mandate that employers cannot stop women employees from benefiting from contraceptive coverage. And even worse was the article that Green Bay Bishop David Ricken wrote in late October. He commanded that this be inserted into all parish bulletins in the diocese. What did he say in that?
He said abortion, homosexual marriage were among the set of non-negotiables when parishioners are voting. And he said that these are areas that are intrinsically evil and cannot be supported by anyone who is a believer in God. Ricken went on to specifically talk about the election. He said that some candidates and one party have even chosen some of these as their parties or their personal platform. And if you would vote for such a candidate, you are morally complicit with these choices, which are intrinsically evil. He repeated that. Bishop Ricken specifically mentioned the contraceptive health care mandate and said, quote, "My church is suing the federal government." So,
So they can talk about these things and have those views, but they can't use their church and their religious ministry to do political activities.
Now, we do have some figures that people who never go to church, of the people who never go to church with election turnout, Obama got 62% of their vote, Romney got 34%. People who attend church weekly, Romney got 59% to Obama's 39%. But people who attend church monthly, we saw Obama at 55 and Romney 44. And there were some other interesting responses. White born-agains went 78% for Romney. 50% of Catholics, despite their bishops, went for Obama. And
they're disobeying the Bible.
So, and there'll be some more polling data coming forward to analyze. But finally, you may have caught that failed vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan of Wisconsin last weekend spoke before what they call a Teleton hall with Faith and Freedom Coalition members. And he said that President Barack Obama is threatening the country's Judeo-Christian values. And he spoke out against Obama's birth control mandate. And he also pointed out that the church is suing, his church is suing the federal government. So, interesting week for secularism.
So stay tuned. We're going to talk with Peter Boghossian about his new book. And we're also going to hear some news out of Tennessee, a feature of the Freedom From Religion Foundation out of Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is WATE Knoxville.
Hundreds of miles from East Tennessee, here in Madison, Wisconsin, sits the organization Freedom From Religion Foundation. It's a group that's become synonymous with taking prayer out of everything from football games to school assemblies, all in a name to protect the First Amendment.
We're not barging into churches. We're not dragging people out of their pews and saying how dumb you are. We think freedom's important, because if it's not important for them, then it's not important for us.
The atheist group may not be going into the churches of East Tennessee, but they've threatened lawsuits against UT, Lenore City, Loudoun County Schools, Knox County Commission, and dozens more.
From the White House down to the principal's office, we've been fighting these battles.
Working out of a cramped office in downtown Madison, the group sent 728 complaint letters in the last 9 months over state church violations. 60 of those were to Tennessee.
We don't find these small communities. We don't go out looking. We've been accused of roaming the country looking for violations.
But that's exactly how many of the people here in East Tennessee feel.
When you have an organization that comes in from the outside, it looks like they're bullying, and I think that's what it is. It's a bullish tactic. They look for wins across the country, and in some reason it just ended up in Lenore City.
But the Freedom From Religion Foundation disagrees.
We're not an outside group. We have members in every state.
Annie Laurie Gaylor founded the group in the 70s at the University of Wisconsin. Now there are nearly 20,000 members nationwide, varying all religious backgrounds, including a former minister as its current co-president.
I get that all the time. What's wrong with you atheists? When most of us have been there and done that, we know what religion is, and we, well, especially me, having been a preacher for 19 years.
Dan Barker says they're not trying to take away your religion, just keep it out of the public square. One target is the prayer heard by thousands at UT football games.
Knoxville is wrong to be insensitive to the views of a wide diversity of people that are in those stands. People can pray. There's churches on just about every corner in Knoxville. Is God only going to hear them if it all happens from the loudspeakers?
UT says their non-sectarian prayer prior to the game does not violate the First Amendment. Freedom From Religion Foundation agrees. However, others like UT Chattanooga and Lenore City School Board have abolished prayer for a moment of silence in response to the foundation's requests. But in Lenore City, Mayor Tony Akin says they're holding their ground when it comes to the word religion on the city's police uniforms.
We're expressing our right. We're upholding everybody's right. We're protecting everyone.
He says they will go to court if necessary.
We don't believe that the word religion on the Lenore City Police Department patch is a violation of their beliefs. We're saying that we're protecting them as well as others. So, and again, if you call 911, we're not going to ask what religion you belong to.
But the foundation says if it's government-based, there shouldn't be any mention of religion.
If our founders didn't need to pray over the Constitution, then why do city or county governments need to pray over liquor licenses and sewers?
The ultimate goal is a day when the foundation isn't needed, but they say we're a long way off from the separation of church and state. In Madison, Wisconsin, Alexis Sotos, 6 News.
And stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're happy to have with us on the phone today our guest, as we mentioned earlier, Dr. Peter Boghossian. He's an instructor in philosophy at Portland State. And Peter has been teaching for more than 20 years to 30,000 students. He's taught in prisons and hospitals, public schools, private schools, seminaries. I'll have to ask him about that. Colleges, universities, Fortune 100 companies, small businesses. His primary research is in critical thinking and moral reasoning. His doctoral research studies, the state of Oregon funded and supported by the Oregon Department of Corrections, consisted of using the Socratic method to help prison inmates increase their critical thinking and moral reasoning abilities and to increase their desistance to criminal behavior. His publications can be found in many magazines and journals, including The Philosopher's Magazine, Skeptical Inquirer, Education Policy Analysis Archives, in Offender Programs Report, Corrections Today, The Skeptic, the Journal of Philosophy of Education, Inside Higher Ed, and many, many more. His work's been noted by the Huffington Post, Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science, Center for Inquiry, the James Randi Educational Foundation, and other media outlets. He was a councilman for the state of Oregon, was a research fellow for the National Center for Teaching and Learning. Currently, he's the chairman of the Prison Advisory Committee for Columbia River Correctional Institution, where he teaches critical thinking, science and pseudoscience, the philosophy of education, and atheism at Portland State University. He's an affiliate research assistant professor in Oregon Health Science University and co-director. Oh, there's 16 more pages here to read of all his accomplishments. Well, anyway, we got to meet Peter Boghossian. And if you're interested in following him, you can Twitter him at Peter Boghossian. His last name is spelled B-O-G-H-O-S-S-I-A-N.
Well, welcome to Free Thought Radio, Peter.
Thank you very much for having me, and thanks so much for the work you do.
Well, you spoke at FFRF's convention a few weeks ago, and I want to thank you for being part of our billboard campaign there in Portland. The billboards are still up, and you're one of 15 people or families featured on, some of them say this is what an atheist looks like.
I've seen them, and I think that they're already having an impact.
Have you gotten your picture taken in front of your own billboard?
No, I haven't, but I've had an unbelievable number of people email me pictures of the billboard, or my students have come up to me and said, oh my gosh, my professor's on a billboard. It's fun.
Really good to hear. And then you're also, you have a new book that you're working on, and the working title is something we love, A Manual for Creating Atheists.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. The book is basically about how to talk people out of their faith. So it teaches people, I call it street epistemology. So it teaches people to be their own clinician, and it arms them with tools from an incredibly diverse body of literature, from, you know, treatment with alcohol and drug addicts, exiting cults, even pedagogical interventions, and how to go out and have a conversation with someone of faith to instill doubt and help them overcome their faith.
So you teach philosophy, and yet you know how to talk the street talk. I mean, What's it like being a philosophy PhD instructor talking to prison inmates about these issues?
It's honest. It's not politically correct. It's candid. It's raw. It's truthful. It's a wonderful experience, and there are no grades, so you don't have to worry about that part. That's a very odious part of teaching. But, you know, I think I very much enjoyed the conversations I've had. I've published those conversations, but I've taken those lessons and taken relevant pieces of the literature, and I really think that we need to look, you do something, the FFRF does something, everyone does something. This is my contribution to the problem of faith. My contribution to the problem of faith is to create, instead of thinking about it in terms of a replacement horseman, creating millions of horsemen to arm them with the tools to help them fight the faith virus and to help separate people from their faith. And so it's no different if it's in prison. I mean, the context is, of course, different, but the same tools and strategies are used wherever you are.
When you talk about using the Socratic method to teach critical thinking to prisoners, can you give us some samples of how that would go?
Sure. There are famous, in fact, that's the presentation that I almost did for the FFRF. There are famous examples in the Republic, and I've published numerous articles about it with prison inmates. But so it'd be something like, you know, the famous example is someone borrows a knife from you, and then that person later becomes insane. They want the knife back. Should you lend them the knife? And the question is, well, what should you do in that case? The question that Socrates talks about is, what is justice? And someone says, well, justice is paying your debts. So that's a counterexample to that. A counterexample. So one of the things that the Socratic method does is it helps people realize contradictions in their beliefs. And so that example, or problems or flaws in their thinking. So that example is, well, if justice is paying your debts, you wouldn't want to give the knife, or in a contemporary context, a gun, to somebody who's become insane because they might hurt other people. So that calls into question the original claim.
What would you do then in that case, just personally? You would not give the knife back then?
No, I would not. Yeah. And I would not, because I would be afraid that harm someone.
Because if you know they're insane, you would even know that their request is not mentally healthy either. So the request really is not a legitimate request. It's an insane request.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that hints at some of the problems of faith, and that people, they think that what they're doing is in their own interest, but it's not. And that manifests itself in their communities, and they try to discharge these faith urges they have through their public institutions. And that's the end that the FFRF is incredibly helpful at that end. My end is the initial end. You know, I want to give people tools so that they can go out into the mall, into the PTA, into the streets, into wherever they are, and help people to lead a life of reason and to value rationality.
So you don't give somebody the knife. How does that lead them to atheism then? How do you connect the dots?
Well, atheism, I've never believed that atheism itself should be promoted. I think critical thinking should be promoted. And if we promote critical thinking and if we change the value, right now we don't really, somewhat of an anti-intellectual society, we don't value critical rationality and reason as highly as we should. And atheism is a conclusion that comes about as a result of a process that one can rely upon to make one's judgments. Faith is not a reliable process. And I think that's a key piece to think about this, is that when people talk about faith, they're talking about making knowledge claims, and the $2 word is epistemology. They're talking about what they know and how they know it. So it helps. Helping people to think more clearly can only have positive effects and positive consequences.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, if you can give us sort of a sneak preview of your primer here about how to create atheists through Socratic method. Say you're, I'm talking to somebody on the street and they say to me, well, how can you be an atheist? Then what's your comeback?
Well, okay, wait, first I even have to step back. One of the things that's important is to take context into account. So is it a long conversation? Is it a short conversation? who's the person, what's your relationship with them. So there are no absolutes. But so when people say to me, how could you be an atheist or what have you, the first thing I try to do is understand somebody's thinking process that led them to the conclusions that they have. So, you know, that whole, the famous Stephen Covey's seek first to be understood, seek first to understand, then to be understood. So I try to understand what it is that people are saying to me and why they believe what they believe.
Well, because the Bible says it's true, and my grandma gave me a Bible, and my source of morality, and I feel okay. A presence of spirit within me, and I want to live after I'm dead, and it just
perfect.
Feels right to me. You know, that's the kind of answers you're going to get.
Yeah, perfect. Well, so you have to, you find one of those answers, like Socrates would find one of those answers and then target that for refutation. So what you do is and we can do this. It doesn't really work well in a role play, but the published articles I've had, the articles I've published with prison inmates show this pretty well. You'd target one of those beliefs and you'd undermine it. And you basically undermine how they think they know it, just enough to instill some doubt. So the goal of this, it's very rare that you do these interventions, you conduct these, and people all of a sudden, you know, voila, lose their faith. It happens over time, and it depends on how much time you have. I personally try to do this everywhere I go, the supermarket, the banks. When I get on Southwest Airlines, I always, you know, board in the last group and try to sit in the middle of people, if I see them reading a Bible.
Oh, you're that guy. Okay.
I am that guy. Everywhere
okay, but
I go,
the guy says, the guy says,
occupation.
But when I pray, I feel the spirit. You can't tell me that's not real, what I feel. What do you do with that specific one?
Yeah, you never, I think it's a mistake to undermine or say that the feelings that people have aren't real. So I would say something like, well, what do you think? Do you think other people feel that in other religions when they pray that way?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so do you think that they're certain that it's true?
Well, the devil's tricking them.
Okay. So here's an interesting thing. Here's an interesting point. So the moment that you mentioned in the litany of things you mentioned before, one of the things that you mentioned was true. So if somebody says that their beliefs are true or their faith tradition is true, that's very different than just saying it makes them feel good. Now, you said both. Yeah. I wouldn't target for refutation the idea that it makes them feel good. People tell me that having faith makes them feel good. I usually take that at face value.
Well, because it does. I used to feel that way, too, when I used to pray. So, you know, I think there's a little drug kick to the cerebellum or something when you pray. There's actually a nice feeling that comes from it.
I've never had faith, so I can't say.
Yeah, me neither.
But we know that, I mean, it's possible, and not only is it possible, it's actual that people who have faith have been talked out of it. Hector Alvarez, Kenneth Daniels, Joel Holman, Loftus, Teresa McBain, Robert Price, Jerry DeWitt. I mean, a tremendous number of people. I mean, we can just look at the success of the clergy project for that.
Yeah. We have to take a break, Peter.
Now, who are we listening to, Dan?
Oh, this is Aaron Copeland.
Because it's his birthday,
November 14th.
And he was a freethinker. We are talking with Peter Boghossian, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. That, of course, is a bit of Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copeland, who was born on November the 14th, the year 1900. He was a non-believing Jew and a non-believer.
I'm Annie Laura Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker, and we're continuing our conversation with philosophy instructor Peter Boghossian, who's working on a new book about how to create an atheist or how to create atheists. And Peter, before the break, you told us that you are teaching a class on atheism. Is that at Portland State?
It's at Portland State. I designed a syllabus, and the syllabus, Michael Shermer posted it on the Skeptics website, so it's available there. And it runs through a litany of questions week by week. In fact, I have the syllabus right in front of me. It runs through a litany of questions week by week that people who aren't taking the class might find interesting.
Well, who shows up? Do you have a lot of students who take the class?
I think I have 126 people registered and about 10 folks from the community. If you're a senior citizen, you can sit in the class. And I have community members who stop by. It's been a super interesting class. I've had a lot of interesting guest lectures. I actually invited a Christian apologist who's a PhD in philosophy and is the chair of George Fox's, which is an evangelical university, a theology department, to come in, and he gave a lecture, which is the antithesis of my life's work, attempting to show that faith was a virtue. And that lecture and the amazing student comments are on YouTube.
And George Fox is a Friends University, a Quaker, aren't they? The evangelical Quakers, I think.
I believe so, yes.
So yes. What textbooks or what do you assign for reading?
I assign Guy P. Harrison's, one of Guy P. Harrison's.
50 Reasons?
Yeah, exactly. It's a good book. In fact, we're coming to that right now. And then Philosophers Without Gods, Meditations on Atheism and the Secular Life from Oxford. But in addition to that, I give a tremendous amount of reading and viewing material. And again, that's on the syllabus so that people can click on some of the debates of Christian apologists, et cetera, et cetera. And next term, I'm actually teaching a class I'm really excited about, New Atheism. And we're going to concentrate on very specific arguments for or against God or for or against certain positions that have been argued. So, and the prerequisite for that class is the atheism class. So every single person who's sitting in that atheism class right now genuinely wants to be there because it's incredibly hard to get in.
So do you have a mix of believers and non-believers among the students?
I don't know what anybody believes. I don't know.
This is kind of like Phil Zuckerman and Barry Cosman, the secular studies. In fact, Phil down at Pitzer has a department now of secular studies. So this seems to be similar to what they're doing.
Yeah, his work is fantastic. So it's similar to that. So we're starting with this atheism class and then new atheism. And I eventually want to write another course on anti-apologetics. There are so many apologetics classes, and apologetics obviously means a defense of the faith.
So, Peter, is this the first semester that you've taught this atheism class, or how long have you been teaching it?
It is. This is the first one. It's the first time it's been taught, and I cannot even possibly tell you the blowback that I got from this and the controversy and the people were upset about this. And
How long did it take to get permission?
I don't understand the machinations of the university. It has to go through, like, the department and the college and the university. But I do know that many people were not happy with this, and I think it's not just because it's an atheism class, but I've published articles that state that the role of the professor should be as belief change or change agent in some classes and some subjects. That gets back to what we talked about before about faith. Faith is not a reliable way to navigate your life. It can't lead you to the truth. It's just, and so helping to disabuse people of bad ways of thinking, I view that's my job. That's what I do.
So this is a new class. The reason I asked, as you can tell, what the students are thinking is, can't you tell from their questions? Are you getting a lot of challenge? Are you getting hostility? Or are you getting people who you think are mostly already atheists?
My guess would be that if I do have some believers in there, they're very quiet.
Uh-huh. But you'll probably figure out after the evaluations a little bit more about the makeup.
The end of course service. Yeah, maybe that's interesting. That's always interesting to see how the students perceive the class. If I were to guess, I'd say the overwhelming majority of people in there were atheists.
Can I ask you, does it seem to be evenly divided between men and women?
Oh, that's a super interesting question. Can I ask you why you ask?
Well, just because, you know, we do tend to see atheist meetings and movements dominated by men. And I was just wondering if you're seeing 50-50.
Super interesting question. I would say it's 60% male. I can look at the data and then email it to you. I'd say it's 60% male and 40% female.
It's kind of close to our group.
And then that's close to the national average because that's what the American Religious Identification Survey, which we mentioned Barry Cosman, shows. So slightly more men than women, but close. We're getting there.
It's slightly more. And as I reflect on it, I don't think men or women or males or females, because I have all age groups in there, are more vocal than the other. I think it's about split.
But this makes sense because having an atheism course in the philosophy department, I mean, almost all philosophy classes are talking about this issue in some way or another in the history of philosophy. So it'd be surprising that there was some blowback about a course like this.
Well, I think the blowback comes from members outside of the community. I think, you know, a lot of people aren't particularly happy with me. So I mean, I think if the class had come from someone else, they would assume that there would be no agenda with it, perhaps.
Somebody who doesn't have their face on a billboard, right?
Yeah, probably that would be a good start.
Well, you make a very good billboard, Peter.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's kind of you to say.
And you have one of your TAs on another billboard?
I do. The TA for the atheism class is on another
billboard. Oh, really? I didn't know that. Well, that's really nice to know.
And she's also the person, I mentioned her work in the Easter Bunny talk, about she's working to change the definition of the DSM to not give faith an exemption.
Huh.
So, you know, and I'm trying to do a lot of stuff. I'm trying to put critical thinking in the schools. I'm trying to finish this book. I'm trying to balance this with my family and my kids.
Well, let us know when the book comes out. We'd be very interested to see it. It's refreshing to talk to you because I debate a lot of philosophers and philosophy professors, and some of them are brilliant and some of them are jaw-droppingly simplistic in the silliest arguments I hear, and it's nice to hear somebody with a clear mind influencing students. Thank you, Peter. Peter Boghossian is a instructor of philosophy at Portland State University, and his book will be coming out about how to create an atheist.
You can follow Peter on Twitter at Peter Boghossian. Thanks so much, Peter.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Dave McCann, for producing the show, Buzz Kemper for announcing. To find out more, go to ffrf.org/radio.
And of course, you can follow FFRF on Twitter and Facebook, and you can go to our website at ffrf.org and look us up, and we hope join us. You can ask for a sample issue of A Free Thought Today. It has pictures from the 35th Annual Convention, including of Peter Boghossian and other speakers, Dawkins, and there'll be convention speeches in the next couple issues. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.